My name is John Gaeta. I did the visual effects on The Matrix, and the opening of the movie was important in that we wanted to alter the logos of the studios, mostly because we felt that they were an evil empire bent on breaking the creative juices of the average director or writer. So we felt that desecrating the studio symbols was an important message to the audience, that we basically reject the system.
Hi, I'm Zach Steinberg. I edited The Matrix, and I read this script and started talking to Larry and Andy about it when we were working on Bound. This is when I met them. I really love these guys. They're really unusual, unique, I think really brilliant directors, and I don't use that word lightly. I actually think a lot of what you see in this movie in many ways is similar to Bound. They're, like all great directors, they're thematically consistent. This opening scene, I always thought was a really important scene because in a classic, great action movie way, it grabs the audience. We meet a woman who we don't know who she is, we don't know if she's good or bad, we don't know which guys are evil, who the good guys are, but we are totally grabbed and we want to find out more. And it also, to me, sort of encapsulates the style of the movie, which is that it just kicks ass, it never stops.
Hi, I'm Carrie Ann Moss, and I play Trinity in The Matrix. And the opening sequence, the opening fight for me, took about 6 months of training and about 4 days of shooting. Part of my screen test to get the part in the movie consisted of fighting with a wire team from Hong Kong for about 3 hours, and they videotaped me. And part of what Larry and Andy wanted to accomplish in this film was that as actors we would do action that that a lot of times in American film stuntmen do instead. So it was really important to them that they felt that whoever played the parts could, you know, do the fighting. And I got the part.
Hey, man, Carrie Ann, did I ever tell you that I saw those screen tests and
down to
the last five people?
No way.
I picked you right out.
You did.
I said to them, she's the one. And naturally, I mean, they already agreed. It wasn't like I influenced them in any great degree, but...
I think it was all you, Zach.
Especially for your arm-breaking skills.
Yeah, my arm-breaking skills.
But you stood out with that special something.
Oh, thank you. The scene was so exciting to shoot. It was the first action sequence that was shot in the shooting of the movie, like in the data days. And so the crew hadn't seen any fighting yet, so they were kind of like, wow, this is what they're doing.
It's true. It just energized the entire production. First scene, right out of the gate, and it was so fierce and so intimidating.
Larry and Andy gave me a bottle of champagne on the last day and said, congratulations, you are now an action hero.
It was really a great scene, and you know, Larry and Andy's directors really stuck to their guns.
This is what they're doing.
It's true. It just energized the entire production. First scene, right out of the gate, and it was so fierce and so intimidating.
Larry and Andy gave me a bottle of champagne on the last day and said, congratulations, you are now an action hero.
It was really a great scene. And, you know, Larry and Andy's directors really stuck to their guns. They shot what they felt they needed to shoot, and as a result, we started drifting farther and further behind schedule. And what we ended up doing was sending some film back to the studio.
In a conceptual way.
Well, it was okay. I mean, we were scheduled for 90 days, and we shot for 118. We sent back this entire opening. Well, since, as Carrie Ann is saying, it's one of the first things we shot, I put it together pretty quickly with Larry and Andy, gave me a lot of input on a couple weekends. And we polished it up a little bit, put some temporary sound effects in it. And from the beginning of the movie, through about 5 minutes from where we are right now, we sent it back to the studio. And really, the report back was they were knocked out. And at that point, they totally supported the movie. They were pretty excited. They knew they had something terrific.
Remember when we all watched that together at Larry's house?
Yeah.
They let us watch the thing the little trailer. And
well, eventually that got shown over and over and over.
And we watched
again.
It like six times at the party.
We put it
so
on
obsessed.
Film. We had the mid rap party.
That's right. We just watched it over and over and over again. I felt so vain. I want to see it again.
It kind of jazzed the whole crew up, didn't it?
It did. It was so exciting.
Well, everyone knew they were doing a movie that was not normal. It was really special.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to say something about this shot right here.
Mm.
This was one of the most... There was an aspect of that shot, that corkscrew jump shot, mm-hmm. that was difficult to overcome, and that was in the way that we shot that shot. And that was, you know, we twirled Carrie Ann around kind of, you know, very barbecue style.
On a rotisserie.
On a rotisserie. And whether it was the right way or not doesn't matter, but what we had at the end was this, a nice spiral shot, but couldn't get a lot of dynamic action out of her body because she was rigged vertically, and she was essentially sort of like a Marquis de Sade type rig setup. And digitally, we had to actually maneuver a few of your limbs, a few of Carrie's limbs. I don't know if you know that.
No. I always remember John's term for
it. To add a little extra. What did I call that?
Frankensteiner.
Frankensteiner.
What did you do to my body?
Here's the thing.
It was very stiff.
Like I said, I would have done it differently if I could do it again, but your body was like very straight, right?
My feet were tied together.
Your feet were tied together and your hands were tied together. Yeah. So, but at the end of the day, Larry and Andy said, what's up? You know, her body's too straight. We want her legs kicking. I'm like, oh my gosh, you want your legs kicking. So I said, well, maybe we can like Frankenstein her. And they're like, what the heck does that mean? And I said, well, maybe we can like, cut her legs digitally and like sort of move them around a little bit, which we did.
My legs.
It was a big difference between what it started out as and what it ended as.
I think it's also funny because, as you probably recall, John, it's one of the great examples where I think, from my experience working with directors, what separates one of the things that separates really good ones from the rest is having a real vision and never veering off of it, and that's what they wanted. And at one point, it became a question from John whether it could be done on a question of cost, and they never dropped off doing it, and we did it.
Yeah,
and it was great. Everybody loves it now.
They tortured me.
They tortured
as
John
as much as I tortured Carrie Ann. It was torture all the way around.
All right. Hey John, you should probably talk about going through the phone there. It's sort of a key moment, sort of especially in retrospect. People don't get it when they're watching it. I don't think. They don't understand the significance, but it's sort of what the whole movie's about.
What do you want me to tell them?
I don't know. Well, we went through the phone.
Who is it?
I like that. You don't see black computer screens. That's a kind of a cool design touch.
2 hours late.
I know. It's her fault.
You got the money?
$2,000.
Hold up.
I always thought it was a nice piece of structural writing on Andy and Larry's part that you don't meet Keanu Reeves, who's the star of the movie. He's the person that the casual moviegoer knows the best.
Hallelujah.
For 10 minutes.
You're my savior, man.
There's no idea that he's even in the movie.
My own personal Jesus.
And of course,
Christ,
I think that shot of meeting him with
the
computer images flicking across his face is, I think it's really great. I think it's
something wrong,
Bill
man.
Pope did a great job shooting it.
It's
kind of like art. It is art.
Like totally.
Computer, it. You ever have that feeling where you're not sure if you're awake or still dreaming?
All the time. It's called mescaline. It's the only way to fly. Hey, look, it just sounds to me like, you need to unplug, man. You know, get some R&R? Hey, what do you think, Deshore? Should we take him with us?
Definitely.
I can't. I have work tomorrow.
Come on. It'll be fun. I promise.
I'm not even going to talk about that.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, I could just mention that it sort of begins the Alice in Wonderland motif. This is a pretty cool set. I was on it a little bit. You, Carrie, you should talk about it, but it was a real kind of Sydney S&M club, and all the extras in the scene, there was a casting call that went out to patrons of the club, and they all came self-costumed.
Yeah, they were full on.
It's pretty wild at lunch. Mm-hmm. Seeing everyone walking around on leashes and with special, either topless or, I don't know, what were they wearing, everything and nothing, right?
Oh, it's amazing.
Sydney is pretty full on. Sydney is better than San Francisco.
I know what you mean.
I was impressed.
Yeah, and I think in some ways the extras in this set sort of said it all.
Thought, you were a guy.
Most guys do.
That was you on my computer. How did you do that?
Right now, all I can tell you is that you're in danger. I brought you here to warn you.
What?
They're watching you, Leo.
Who is?
Please just listen. I know why you're here, Neo. I know what you've been doing.
My favorite part of the movie is that little blue thing in the background back there. Seriously, it's the best visual effect in the entire movie.
You're looking for him.
That one right there?
Yeah, I like that. I always liked that. I don't know what he was what was going on back there. But
I think that's on a TV
monitor. And it looked pretty good in Technicolor, too.
Yeah.
I was looking for an answer. It's the question that drives us near. It's the question that brought you.
I had to audition with this scene.
I actually remember that. I saw that. You did a pretty good job.
Thanks.
What is the matrix?
The answer is up there, Neo.
It's looking for you.
Find you. If you wanted to.
This scene. I love the window washers.
You know, it's funny. It's, I think, in a lot of ways, the window washers are why the scene's in the movie.
Yeah.
I think it's a typical, pretty low-key Wachowski brothers joke. You know, the little constant squeaking window washers that the whole
so
scene.
So funny.
Yeah.
He's...
Company has a problem. Time has come to make a choice, Mr. Anderson. Either you choose to be at your desk on time from this day forth, or you choose to find yourself another job. Do I make myself clear?
Yes, Mr. Reinhardt, perfectly clear.
This is like the first day of shooting.
Yeah. This is the first day of shooting.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
This scene right here.
Thomas Anderson?
I was pretty blown away when they...
Yeah, that's me.
When we got the dailies and the stuff.
I think everybody showed up. We had the ritual, the Chinese ritual.
Mm-hmm. Wu Ping and
all
his Hong Kong crew.
Lit incense and roasted a pig.
Roasted a pig outside. It was for good luck for the shoot.
Yeah, and for safety.
And it worked.
Thank God.
It worked.
Hello?
Hello, Neo.
I think it was also the same day that we were flying helicopters in the wrong section of town.
Right.
About to be dumped as a production as a result.
Right. Second unit was shooting simultaneously. We had a lot of film that first day.
I was in that helicopter.
Oh, you were? Oh, yeah. And yeah, you guys went to places that were off limits. In fact, I heard a story that the Huey was flown right past like a parliament office of some sort. The guys who made the law in the first place that you couldn't fly.
Okay, how cool are the agents?
Hugo Weaving.
How amazing.
Let's
Look
give
at
it
that
up
man.
For Hugo Weaving. He's great.
No, but if you don't want to find out, I suggest you get out of there.
How?
I can guide you, but you must do exactly as I say.
Okay.
The cubicle across from you is empty.
Well, you know, I think I'd like to make a comment that Lawrence Fishburne's voice
now,
that kicks Darth Vader's ass.
Well, stay here for just a moment. I read a lot of stuff in the reviews comparing, very favorably comparing this movie to its predecessors.
It's a good movie.
Yeah, well, it's a great movie.
We're all very proud of it.
Yeah.
I'm disgusted.
You're not proud?
Oh, no. It's led me to do, like, unspeakable things.
Like what?
Well, I can't even say. It's my whole life has been ruined by this movie.
Oh, you're so funny.
Well, I know what he means, I think. I don't know.
Oh, you mean you've been spoiled?
Well, I mean, you wonder if you're ever going to get a chance to work on this level again. It's so unusual.
It's very... Yeah, I agree. I feel the same way. It's kind of painful.
Is that what you mean, John?
Yeah. The pain was unreal.
John has spiritually never left that club in Sydney. He's still on the rack.
I love the green colors in The Matrix. Larry and Andy wanted the Matrix to have a green tone to it and to have on the neb a blue tone.
Right.
You really see it here, the green. Bill Pope.
Trying to very subtly show that this world is not exactly right.
Yeah.
They did a really, people who run The Matrix did a really good job creating it, but it's... not exactly correct.
One thing I'll add is
we did a lot of work in the skies there, right, John?
Yeah, everything was very the colors were very manipulated, processed.
Mm-hmm.
The sky, it was a law that the Matrix was to avoid blue at all cost, and blue was too much of a happy color. And the Matrix was an oppressive place to be. And we spent a lot of time in all the outdoor scenes, particularly all the exteriors in this movie, were manipulated to suck the blue out. And in part, at times, sort of a monochromatic world devoid of some color, devoid of life, because it was a synthetic reality.
I love this shot. I mean, this is a great synthesis of live action and CGI, the shot we just saw. I think John and all the guys at Mannix did a great job of, you know, just pulling through that TV. You're not even aware of it. You just go through that television from a video image into a...
There are moments through this picture that are, to me the only other picture I sort of think about that are similar is this picture by Alfred Hitchcock called Rope, and it's a way of joining two scenes, two realities together through some sort of portal, and the brothers, you know, just simply call that transitions. But there's a number of transitions in this movie in which you flawlessly pass through the front of a screen, and you realize that it's not a screen but rather a window. Another film actually, the beginning of Citizen Kane, where you go in through the skylight window at the beginning of the movie. One of my favorites, and one that I thought about a lot every time that we would pass through a television screen. You would be basically breaking the barriers of a two-dimensional computer facade and pushing into a three-dimensional world. And the entire world of the Matrix really is a construct. It's a dimensional construct that looks everything like the real world. So every time you go through a screen, it's pretty significant. Individual. A man who calls himself
Morpheus. Now, whatever you think you know about this man is irrelevant. He is considered by many authorities to be the most dangerous man alive. My colleagues believe that I am wasting my time with you, but I believe you wish to do the right thing. We're willing to wipe the slate clean, give you a fresh start.
In the scene where the bug enters Keanu's belly button, We actually had a whole torso that was based off of a model, a cast of his body, and it was very well done by this company, MEG. And we used to always, Nick, the bug man, was the head of that project, and he was great. He did a couple of other things that are coming up later, but the torso was perfect, and included everything from like little belly button hairs and certain very specific nuances of Keanu's torso, which will never be mentioned in any media.
But it's a real, from a technical point of view, it's, I think it's a pretty great achievement, because it's a real synthesis of pure real film, a certain amount of prosthetic devices that are actually filmed, and of course pure animation that's added on top of additional shot. It really involves sort of all techniques. Can you say, John?
Yeah.
And pretty successful.
The mouth ceiling was a digital effect.
The entire bug is digital. There's what you're about to see. I'll show you in a minute. When he opens the case and he pulls out the little bug, that's real. Everything from that point on is digital that has to do. This growth. Tremendous amount of work. It was done by a company in Australia called D-Film under John's supervision, with a sub-supervisor there, John Tum, who did a wonderful job for us. I always love that little transition, just because he doesn't know if he's having a dream. It's a nightmare.
This line is tapped, so I must be brief. They got to you first, but they've underestimated how important you are. If they knew what I know, you would probably be dead.
What are you talking about? What is happening to me?
You are the one, Neo. You see, you may have spent the last few years looking for me, but I've spent my entire life looking for you. Now, do you still want to meet?
Yes.
Then go to the Adams Street Bridge.
Interesting, this scene. One of the things I sort of appreciate about the movie visually is that it's so dense, it's so thick. There's so many different looks. I'm just reminded of that right now with this heavy, heavy rain. Later on, we get into the white construct with this pure white room. It just sort of never ends. It's got everything in it. Sometimes we used to joke around and say it's like the kitchen sink. I remember when we were in pre-production in Sydney, we're about to see the bug extractor, which was actually built. Do you remember, John, that some model maker spent like 12 weeks building this thing? It's an incredible working device. It's a beautiful little piece of mechanics. Larry and Andy love that sort of thing.
I think in the spirit of Brazil or 1984, two films of recent memory, that the essence of arcane technology of the future seems to be important here. And this sort of dystopian technology.
It's kind of interesting. Everything is like made up of things that could have been thrown away or discarded or used before.
Which is pretty much realistic. A real idea.
What is that thing?
I think you're bugged. Try and relax.
I guess it's kind of obvious, but I always enjoyed the wordplay. We think you're bugged. He's got a bug in him. Now they're going to go fish the bug out.
this little graphic on the device is like ultra ultra low tech. This is the best of Australian low tech right here. Some squishy models that these guys like just mushed together and shot with video. This is a matte painting here. This is a 13-story building that was made out of a, what was it, a two-story building.
Right. Well, it's just an extension of the building, right? This movie, I think, has a lot of references. It has fun with references, and this is the gothic section, gothic horror movie.
Let me give you one piece of advice. Be honest. He knows more than you can imagine.
I think Larry and Andy love genre. And once again, one of the things I like about this movie is that it shows how much it loves genre, but then I feel, and I hope for the audience, it goes way beyond any one genre that it tries to have fun with. It's an honor to
meet you. Which is a very sort of current way of going about it, because really, like, the generation of the late 90s is really quite a blender of previous cultural, moments in entertainment and events all jumbled into one thing.
I imagine
these guys really are now you're feeling a bit like good us. Representatives of their generation,
down the rabbit hole.
Because they know that the psyche of the of the young adult in this time is
you have the look of a man who
is really full of many different things all operating to tell them what's real.
This is not far from the truth. Do you believe in fate, Neil?
No.
Why not?
Because I don't like the idea that I'm not in control of my life.
I know exactly what
I first met Larry and Andy when I went in to meet him on Bound, their
Let
first
me
movie.
Tell you why you're here.
I always think it's remarkable that this is their second movie. It's such an incredibly accomplished film. And I'm going to put a little plug here for anyone who hasn't seen Bound. Go see it, because it's a great movie. It's a small mob movie, but boy, is it full of great, great stuff. I read that script. Just from reading the script and knowing that the writers were going to direct it and seeing that voice on the page, I was absolutely certain that of the talent of these two individuals. And when I went in to meet them, I guess I effectively told them that, because, boy, I would have hated to leave that room without having gotten that job. And I wasn't sure if I had gotten it. It took about a week for them to make up their minds, but I felt pretty good about meeting them. And we bonded, and ever since then we work very closely together, as they do with everybody on their team. They're very collaborative. They're a lot of fun to work with. Ultimately, though, it's all about what they've got in their heads. It's a very clear vision.
It's a world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
What truth?
That you are a slave, Neo. Like everyone else, you were born into bondage. Born into a prison that you cannot smell or taste or touch. A prison for your mind. Unfortunately, no one can be told what the Matrix is. You have to see it for yourself.
These next couple of shots coming up were storyboarded for the reflections in the glasses.
You should say, like, the pill shots, you know.
The pill shots. Right, thanks, John.
Say it over again.
These next couple shots, these pill shots, were storyboarded very carefully for the reflections in the glasses. And they were actually, we had some problems in the set shooting them. I think, John, you guys rescued this pretty well, creating these reflections out of shots that were kind of imperfect.
Remember,
I think it works beautifully.
All I'm offering is the truth.
There's a lot of reflections in the movie, a lot of examples of reflections. It's a theme. What can I say?
Follow me. Hey, Pac, are we online?
Almost.
This film is pretty cool in that...
Time is always against us.
There's some visual effects in here that essentially have been seen before. The mirror melting in particular is reminiscent of, to me, of like Terminator 2 and some other films in which there's a very reflective sort of entity. And for the most part, you could say, you know, after all these years, it's sort of like you could say it's off the shelf. But like many effects in this movie, conceptually, these effects are used in a different way, and that is one of the big turn-ons of the picture in general, is that the brothers use a lot of conventional, at this point, conventional techniques. In visual effects to move their story, to represent ideas that they want to get across. For example, the essentially the induction that Neo goes through to, you know, realize that he's, you know, his world is changing. It's a conceptual tool that they've developed, and it's not for razzle dazzle. It looks cool, but it's not necessarily groundbreaking.
You ever had a dream, Neo, that you were so sure was real?
And that's important because we've sort of lost our way a little bit in visual effects movies, thinking that everything that you do has to be never seen before. That's wrong, you know. It should be a design tool to move the story, and they use visual effects in a different way than a lot of directors to move their stories.
But ironically, Johnny, I think what you're saying is right, but ironically, that's quite groundbreaking. I think I calculated out once that about 20% of this movie is digital negative. It's gone through the digital process, but it is totally supporting the story at all times. You're never creating a scene or cutting to a scene so you can exploit or explore a visual effect. It's always, how can the visual effect tell the story better? If it's a visual effect or if it's a practical effect, it's simply there to tell the story. And it's, as a result, seamlessly integrated. I think when the audience watches this movie, they're not that aware that they're watching visual effects. It's sort of the cumulative effect. That aware that they're watching visual effects. It's sort of the cumulative effect.
Power plant is a very cool scene in that this is a place where we get to see for the first time reality, and reality is quite horrifying, as is pretty obvious when Keanu happens upon the curators of this prison. We had quite a good time taking Jeff Darrow's conceptuals of what the beings that inhabit this place look like, and pushing them in a way that as far as computer graphics goes, there's not been a representation in a sort of biomechanical form with the detail level that some of these creatures actually have. To me, I have to go back as far as Alien and Aliens 2, the work of Giger, before I find anything that is remotely close to the detail level. time and time again, people come up to me and they go, "Wow, there's like all these, there's so many special effects where like you move Carrie and Keanu and Lawrence around with amazing, you know, digital effects and this, that, and the other thing." And they recite all these shots that are like not visual effects. It happens all the time. And the amazing thing about it is that the stunts are in many ways so complicated, so more over the top than traditional American stunts, that people don't believe that they're not done with digital assist. And I constantly get hounded about. I get much more credit, and I have to remind people that no, that's real.
Far from it. He still needs a lot of work.
Interesting thing about this scene is it's quite an elaborate prosthetic applique that's supporting all of the pins in Keanu's body, but additionally he has real acupuncture pins in his body. All of the pins in his head actually are real, and they had a specialist come in and place each and one of those before the scene began, which I guess is also interesting in the background, because he probably was quite relaxed for the whole scene.
I think Keanu did a lot of really unusual work as an actor in this whole movie. That whole beginning of the film was the last thing shot. Keanu had he progressively lost weight to go to that scene. I think he dropped something like, 20 pounds? I don't remember, John. Do you remember? But he was really, really skinny, because he had been you have to remember, his character has been in this power plant. He'd been submerged in the gel, and his muscles had atrophied, as the movie says. And of course, in later areas of the movie, after he's been worked on and worked with by Morpheus and his crew, he's in pretty good shape. So he went through a tremendous physical arc in making this movie. He did it very successfully. It's really great.
When? You believe it's the year 1999, when in fact it's closer to 2199. I can't tell you exactly what year it is, because we honestly don't know. There's nothing I can say that will explain it for you, Neo. Come with me. See for yourself. This is my ship, the Nebuchadnezzar. It's a hovercraft.
This is one of the great sets in this movie. It was originally drawn by Jeff Darrow, who's a graphic novel artist that Larry and Andy met and formed a very strong relationship with. And our production designer, Owen Patterson, translated it and built this crazy set, this great set.
This is APOC, Switch, and Cypher.
I think this is pretty much one of the best updates since 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea when it comes to technological nautical.
You wanted to know what the Matrix is, in Trinity. Try to relax. This will feel a little weird.
This is the construct. It's our loading program. We can load anything from clothing equipment.
This was an interesting scene in that
training simulations.
The stage setup that we were shooting this on was incredibly white, and it was completely wraparound and lit to a point where really you couldn't detect any texture of the floor or the walls, and you lost sense of the space. And walking out in the middle of it truly was a dizzying experience. You didn't have a sense of the ground under your feet. It was almost as if you were experiencing the virtual white void for real.
This is the world that you know. The world as it was at the end of the 20th century. It exists now.
Here we go again.
Pass
through a TV
that we call the Matrix.
Similar to what we did in the interrogation room.
You've been living in a dream world, Neo. This is the world as it exists today.
This is a three-dimensional matte painting, and essentially a full 3D environment.
Welcome to the desert.
Was constructed around the set and seemed to the set.
We have only bits and pieces of information, but what we know for certain is that at some point in the early 21st century, all of mankind was united in celebration. We marveled at our own magnificence as we gave birth to AI.
This little monologue, Zach, I'd be interested in your opinion. This little monologue is, I consider, the reason why most people come to see the movie three times. Right here. To understand what the hell Lawrence is saying.
Well, it's funny, I've met a lot of people who have seen the movie multiple times, and they get a lot out of it every time. I'm pretty happy about that.
Been dependent on machines to survive. Fate, it seems, is not without a sense of irony.
This scene right here, along with the bullet time moments, the virtual moments, was begun on the very, very first day of production. And it took a year to a year and a half to create the textures and the forms and the breakdown of how this camera move really worked. It's one of the most complicated computer graphic shots of all time to that date.
For those who don't realize, this shot we're just seeing right now is a complete CG shot. There's nothing shot on a conventional camera. It was all painted in a computer, essentially.
And now this shot, this is, once again, Nick the Bugman of MEG and the animatronic baby. I considered one of the most shocking shots I've seen in modern filmmaking, and
very much so.
Amazed that that shot is actually in a largely distributed film.
I don't believe it. It's not possible.
I didn't say it would be easy, Neo. I just said it would be the truth.
Stop. Let me out. Let me out. I want out.
Easy, Neo. Easy.
Take this away. Don't touch me. Stay away from me. Stay away from me. I don't believe it.
It's gonna pop.
Breathe, Neo. Just breathe.
Not many people know this, but the puke that Keanu pukes is absolutely real. That's from the really bad chicken pot pie that we had all eaten that day.
I can't go back, can I?
No.
But if you could, would you really want to? I feel I owe you an apology. We have a rule. We never free a mind once it's reached a certain age. It's dangerous. The mind has trouble letting go. I've seen it before, and I'm sorry. I did what I did because I had to. When the Matrix was first built, there was a man born inside who had the ability to change whatever he wanted, to remake the Matrix as he saw fit. It was he who freed the first of us, taught us the truth. As long as the Matrix exists, the human race will never be free. After he died, the Oracle prophesied his return, and that his coming would hail the destruction of the Matrix, end the war, bring freedom to our people. That is why there are those of us who have spent our entire lives searching the Matrix, looking for him. I did what I did because I believe that search is over. Some rest. You're going to need it.
For what?
Your training.
Morning. Did you sleep? You look tonight. I guarantee it.
I'm Tank. I'll be your operator.
You don't have any holes?
Nope. Me and my brother Dozer were both 100% pure, old-fashioned, homegrown human, born free right here, in the real world. Genuine child of Zion.
Zion?
If the war was over tomorrow, Zion's where the party would be.
It's a city.
The last human city. The only place we have left.
Where is it?
Deep underground, near the Earth's core where it's still warm. Live long enough, you might even see it. Goddamn. I gotta tell you, I'm fairly excited to see what you're capable of. If Morpheus is right, no. We're not supposed to talk about this. But if you are, very exciting time. We got a lot to do. We gotta get to it. Now,
I'm supposed to start with these operation programs first. As Major Barron said, let's do something a little more fun. How about combat training?
Jiu-jitsu? I'm going to learn jiu-jitsu.
Holy shit. Hey, Mikey, I think he likes it. How about some more?
Hell yes.
Straight. He's a machine.
I know Kung Fu.
Show me.
This is a sparring program.
One of the more fun
similar
reasons
to
make this movie.
Reality of the Matrix. It has the same basic
Larry
rules,
and Andy
like
love Hong Kong movies. They gave me I don't know, a whole lot of them to watch before we started this, because I asked him, we started talking about it, and understand. I always felt like the action in this movie is, in a sense, like a dance number from a
Hollywood movie from the 30s in that it's shot wide. And what's incredible is that, once again, these are not stunt doubles. These are the actual actors doing this work. It's very carefully choreographed with Wu Ping. Larry Nandy and the actors and Wu Ping worked together for months and months before the movie started. That was the inception of this whole scene. They would work out shots. I would sometimes come down to the dojo and look at them just out of my own personal interest. They would shoot them on just a VHS and start getting a feel for what they could do. And out of that evolved this really tremendous scene. It's all practical. It's all a lot of wire work, obviously. It's very, very carefully choreographed. Essentially, it was a fairly easy scene to edit because it was really just executed so incredibly well and planned so very carefully.
As soon as the music comes on, you realize there's something a little bit more than the average fight scene. For me, I knew right away that this was a game simulation.
This scene is so much fun. The audience, I have so much fun watching it. Every time I watch it, I get a big grin on my face. I think the audience feels the same way, I hope. It's when he says, "I know Kung Fu." I mean, who the hell doesn't want to know Kung Fu? See, this whole idea that you can download whatever you want to learn, it's such a seductive idea. This place. Maybe it'll really happen in the future. What do you think, John?
You think that's it?
Guess we can strike that last question.
My basic opinion is that the visual effects technicians of today will be the social engineers of the future.
Again.
Neurokinetics, they're way above normal.
What are you waiting for? You're faster than this. Don't think you are. Know you are.
Come on, stop trying to hit me and hit me.
Did you guys like those shots?
Yeah. Yeah.
In the end?
Yeah. I mean, those shots, another example of recursive act. When he says, "I know Kung Fu," I mean, who the hell doesn't want to know Kung Fu? See, this whole idea that you can download whatever you want to learn, it's such a seductive idea. In this place. Maybe it'll really happen in the future. What do you think, John?
You think that's
I guess we can strike that last question.
My basic opinion is that the visual effects technicians of today will be the social engineers of the future.
Again.
Neurokinetics, they're way above normal.
What are you waiting for? You're faster than this. Don't think you are. Know you are.
on, stop trying to hit me and hit me!
Did you guys like those shots?
Yeah. Yeah.
In the end?
Yeah. I mean, those shots, another example of recursive action. One of them is what we call the fist bouquet, when you see, I don't know, how do you describe that? It's when every frame that you sort of get the shadow of the frame before it, and the hand seems to move through the frame. Those are expensive shots. They're practically thrown away, but I think that within the movie, within the scene, they're great, and they add so much, and it's an example of what I was trying to talk about before, which is how the visual effects become just part of the palette that the directors use, just like, you know, acting or physical effects or camera work, just to support their story.
I just wanted to say that Lawrence Fishburne kicks holy ass. I completely believe that guy jumps from skyscraper to skyscraper. What if he makes
it? Well, you should. You made him do it.
I know. But what if he does?
He won't.
Come on.
This is a good example of the environment, the sky environment of the Matrix being devoid of color. That shot was modeled completely after Wile E. Coyote.
It doesn't mean anything.
That was a mandate. We want Keanu to fall like Wile E. Coyote.
Makes it real.
If you're killed in the Matrix, you die here?
The body cannot live without the mind.
Remember you ever bringing me dinner. There is something about him, isn't there?
Don't tell me you're a believer now.
I just keep wondering if Morpheus is so sure. Why doesn't he take him to see the Oracle?
Morpheus will take him when he's ready.
Sequence.
The Matrix is a system, Neo.
We call the Agent Training Program.
That system is our enemy. But when you're inside, you look around, what do you see? Business
methods. I think it's a lot of fun in concept and the way it's shot. If you look carefully, pretty much everybody, all the extras in the scene are twins. There's at least two of them. And a lot of them are duplicated more times. Like, you'll deliberately see them walking left to right and right to left. The theory being that since it's an agent training program that was designed by Tank, probably, of the Matrix crew, he took some shortcuts.
Were you listening to me, Neo? Or were you looking at the woman in the red dress?
I was...
Look again. Freeze it.
This isn't the Matrix?
No.
This was actually an easy one. This was, baby bullet time. And all you have to do is shoot the crowd separate from the main actors. And in regards to the main actors, Neo and Lawrence are one separately shot scene. The agent is another, and the crowd is a third. Once you shoot the crowd, and then once you shoot the agent, you sort of know where their positions are, and you guide Neo and Morpheus to act around those positions. The whole thing is shot in front of a green screen.
Lawrence Fishburne and Keanu Reeves were acting on a green set. And Agent Smith on that set was represented by what's called a C-stand, just a light stand that they walked around, and they knew eventually that light stand would become Agent Smith.
In a way, it's really it's kind of interesting because, you know, doing a film in this way, it actually is kind of virtual, because your environment is added later.
What are you trying to tell me? That I can dodge bullets?
No, Neo. I'm trying to tell you that when you're ready...
Those are great natural reflections in the glasses. Lawrence Fishburne's glasses.
We got trouble.
The Nebuchadnezzar, one of the best spaceships ever created in visual effects. It's 100% computer graphics,
right,
as is the tunnel.
The exterior shots. These interiors, of course, are a set with the tunnel. Is John and his guys, so I'll put that in. You're flying through this incredible tunnel, all this stuff.
This movie is a landmark film in that it is almost exclusively computer graphics. The only miniature scene in the film is the helicopter crash.
And even that, in the helicopter crash, it's a such a large-scale miniature as to practically be real.
We designed the tunnel and the Sentinels and the Nebuchadnezzar by way of conceptuals from, Andy and Larry. And additionally, though, we studied 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and extracted all the details, the Jules Verneian details from that film.
Sort of interesting editing a movie like this with so many visual effects, because on a typical movie, well, you basically have a scene like this, or this little section of this scene, well, here we go with the visual effect again, where when they finish shooting the scene, the end of that day or two or 3 days, however long it takes to shoot the scene, you've got all the film you're ever going to have. In this movie, you're always getting more film, and you can always, within limits of budget, and depending how much you can talk the studio into stretching that budget, you can keep getting more film. You have more options. And I ended up really loving that.
There's a certain philosophy of the way that the Sentinels move. In fact, there's a certain philosophy of the way all the creatures in reality move, and being that they are derivative of a computer-based evolution, there is a certain logic to all of the motion, and the limbs of the Sentinels and the Dockbot, which is the power plant creature, and other creatures, takes on somewhat of a symmetrical higher order. Tentacles seem to flail in patterns and reveal the creature in a much more sort of mathematical way, and that was purposeful. We were trying to find the line between organic and synthetic, and we thought that basically patterns were the answer. Predictable patterns were the answer, with nuances that made them slightly imperfect. Why didn't I take the blue pill? What, you don't believe that? I spent like a year developing that.
I was just thinking about it. I went,
Yeah. It's true. If you fucking knew how.
No, I know.
How all many hours.
Oh, yeah, we watched all those hundreds of hours of pre-visualizations. Commenting on them and stuff, right?
Yeah. So, can I ask you something?
Did he tell you why he did it? Why you're here? Jesus! What a mind job! So you're here to save the world. What do you say to something like that? Little piece of advice. You see an agent, you do what we do. Run. You run your ass off.
Thanks for the drink.
Sweet dreams.
Do we have a deal, Mr. Reagan?
You know, I know this steak doesn't exist. I know that when I put it in my mouth, the Matrix is telling my brain that it is juicy and delicious. After 9 years, you know what I realize? Ignorance is bliss.
Then we have a deal.
I don't want to remember nothing. Nothing. You understand? I don't want to be rich. You know, someone important. Like an actor.
Whatever you want, Mr. Reagan.
Okay. And get my body back in a power plant. Reinsert me into the Matrix. I'll get you what you want.
Access codes to the Zion mainframe.
No, I told you I don't know them. I can get you the man who does.
Morpheus.
Here you go, buddy. Breakfast of champions.
If you close your eyes, it almost feels like you're eating runny eggs.
You know, a bowl of snot.
Do you know what it really reminds me of? Tasty wheat. Did you ever eat tasty wheat?
No, but technically neither did you.
Well, that's exactly my point. Exactly. Because you have to wonder now. How do the machines really know what tasty wheat tasted like, huh? Maybe they got it wrong. Maybe what I think tasty wheat tasted like actually tasted like oatmeal or tuna fish. That makes you wonder about a lot of things. You take chicken, for example. Maybe they couldn't figure out what to make chicken taste like, which is why chicken tastes like everything. And maybe they couldn't figure out.
It's a single-celled protein combined with synthetic aminos, vitamins, and minerals. Everything the body needs.
It doesn't have everything the body needs. So I understand that you've run through the agent training program. You know, I wrote that program.
Here it comes.
So what did you think of her?
Of who?
The woman in the red dress. I designed her. She doesn't talk very much, but if you'd like to meet her, I can arrange a much more personalized meal.
The digital pimp hard at work.
I pay no attention to these hypocrites, Neo. To deny our own impulses is to deny the very thing that makes us human.
Dozer, when you're done, bring the ship up to broadcast depth. We're going in. Taking Neo to see her.
See who? The Oracle.
Everyone please observe. The fastened seatbelt and no smoking signs have been turned on. Sit back and
I love the dailies in this scene. There were, you know, we have the two locations, the inside of the Lafayette Hotel and the inside of the Nebuchadnezzar in the chairs. And the guys mounted a camera up here and just did a complete arc around the characters and did a complete arc around the phone. First time I tried it, I did it with dissolve, and then I looked at it with cuts, and Andy and Larry like it a lot with cuts, and I do too.
We're in.
It's a lot of fun, just a little bit of film fun putting it together. There's something they do a lot in the movie, we do a lot. Speed changes during the shot. where the camera changes speed, either a real camera or it's done virtually by the visual effects guys later on.
Unbelievable, isn't it? God.
I think this scene is almost a perfect moment in that. How on earth is it that the Wachowski brothers could figure out, just by way of selective frame rate and, you know, dramatic pause and all of that, that you could believe that something that looks pretty much straightforward, coming out of a building and riding in a car, is a transition into a completely different universe? It's an amazing transition.
Yes.
Well, you know, it's interesting because a lot of times you would have shot this scene practically, but this scene was shot with a combination of rear projection and green screen, and the reason is that the backgrounds are happening at a different frame rate than the interior of the car. And I think that gives you a subtle indication that the world is askew. And I think it's something you don't normally, you wouldn't maybe notice it directly, but it truly works.
So is this the same oracle that made the prophecy?
Yes. She's very old. She's been with us since the beginning.
The beginning?
Of the resistance.
And she knows what? Everything?
She would say she knows enough.
And she's never wrong.
Try not to think of it in terms of right and wrong. She is a guide, Neil. She can help you to find the path.
She helped you?
Yes.
What did she tell you?
That I would find the one. I told you I can only show you the door. You have to walk through it.
Hello, Neo. You're right on time. Make yourself at home, Morpheus. Neo, come with me. These are the other potentials. You can wait here.
I think this scene, which he goes to meet the Oracle, meets Spoon Boy right now, and then meets the Oracle herself in the kitchen in a few moments. In many ways, encapsulates what's going on in the entire movie. It really directly addresses the issue of reality, the two worlds. And who
we
believe we are.
Bend the spoon. That's impossible. Instead, only try to realize the truth.
What truth?
There is no spoon.
There is no spoon?
It's one of my favorite lines in the movie.
That it is not the spoon.
There is no spoon.
It is only yourself.
Anything on visual effects here, John?
Just another example of how
the Oracle was
conventional effects can just further the storyline. It's
right.
It doesn't razzle or dazzle. It just serves to advance the idea.
I know you're Neil. Be right with you.
You're the Oracle?
Bingo. Not quite what you were expecting, right?
I've always loved the fact that you have this oracle who, by all rights, should be some kind of spooky individual, and it's your grandmother.
Yeah.
I'd ask you to sit down, but you're not going to anyway. And don't worry about the vase.
What vase?
That vase.
I'm sorry.
I said don't worry about it. I'll get one of my kids to fix it.
How did you know?
Oh. What's really going to bake your noodle later on is... Would you still have broken it if I hadn't said anything? You're cuter than I thought. I can see why she likes you.
Who?
Not too bright, though. You know why Morpheus brought you to see me. So, what do you think? Do you think you're the one?
Honestly, I don't know.
You know what that means? Latin means know thyself. I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Being the one is just like being in love. No one can tell you you're in love. You just know it. Through and through. Balls to bones. Well, I better have a look at you. Open your mouth. Say ah.
Ah.
Okay. Now I'm supposed to say, that's interesting, but then you say...
But what?
But you already know what I'm going to tell you.
I'm not the one.
Sorry, kid. You got the gift. But it looks like you're waiting for something.
What?
Your next life, maybe. Who knows? That's the way these things go. What's funny?
Morpheus. He almost had me convinced.
I know. Poor Morpheus. Without him, we're lost.
What do you mean, without him?
Are you sure you want to hear this? Morpheus believes in you, Neo. And no one, not you, not even me, can convince him otherwise. He believes it so blindly that he's going to sacrifice his life to save yours.
What?
You're going to have to make a choice. In the one hand, you'll have Morpheus's life. And on the other hand, you'll have your own. One of you is going to die. Which one will be up to you? I'm sorry, kiddo, I really am. You have a good soul. And I hate giving good people bad news. No. Don't worry about it. As soon as you step outside that door, you'll start feeling better. You'll remember you don't believe in any of this fate crap. You're in control of your own life. Remember? Here. Take a cookie. I promise by the time you're done eating it, you'll feel right as rain.
What was said was for you, and for you alone.
They're on their way.
Deja vu.
What did you just say?
Nothing, just had a little deja vu.
What did you see? What happened?
A black cat went past us, and then another that looked just like it.
How much like it? Was it the same cat?
Might have been, I'm not sure.
Switch, APOC.
What is it?
A deja vu is usually a glitch in the matrix. It happens when they change something.
Let's go.
They cut the hard line at the track. Get out!
I have to say, editorially, this scene was a lot of fun. This next 5 or 10 minutes. You have all this action taking place in different places. Upstairs, downstairs, on the ship. It's all happening simultaneously. It's a real treat. Get material like this to edit.
Oh, that's what they changed. We're trapped. There's no way out.
Be calm. Give me your phone.
They'll be able to track it.
Oh, that's what they changed. We're trapped. There's no way out.
Be calm. Give me your phone.
They'll be able to track it.
We have no choice.
Operator.
Tank, find a structural drawing of this building. Find it fast.
I think probably quite a few people who have read some of the publicity about the movie probably know at this time that Andy and Larry, when they started out, they were writing screenplays and working as carpenters in construction, contractors and carpenters, and they have a lot of interest in building. They love building things. They love, in a sense, this movie is a build. They built it from all these disparate elements. But on a more specific level, I think they love this wet wall, this scene, this idea that you're actually going into the bowels of a building. It's interesting for people who watch Bound. It's a lot of that same idea there in terms of the bathrooms and the connection between walls. This set was, I don't know, remember how high it was, John? It was pretty much a full-scale set. It was probably the longest, narrowest set. Certainly the longest, narrowest set I've ever seen. There's all these
and actors. It was vertical.
It was a vertical set. Truly a vertical set. It's a practical set.
The worst visual effects.
probably shouldn't put that one in the
This movie
comment.
Is full of crap effects. It's amazing that it even skates by on the flimsy excuse of effects that it has. It's a nicely edited scene. It's very like.
Nice.
The great Morpheus. We meet at last.
And you are.
I love this bathroom scene.
Agent Smith.
It's another example. It's like the dojo is. It's very carefully planned and choreographed, and very well executed. Very well executed.
There were a lot of injuries.
There were a fair amount of injuries, but I think very little when you compared to the amount of action in the movie. Nobody was ever, thank God, seriously injured.
Take him. Operator.
Yeah, I need an exit fast. Yeah, there was an accident. Goddamn car accident. All of a sudden, boom. Somebody up there still likes me.
I got you.
Get me out of here, fast.
Nearest exit, Franklin and Erie, an OTB repair shop.
Right.
We edited this, the whole movie, operator. At the... The new, it was a brand new facility in Sydney, Fox Studios from Los Angeles.
We need an exit.
Built a branch in Australia called Fox Studios Australia, and it was a brand new facility. We were the first person, first film, I'd rather say, to shoot on the stages there. They're really good, very, very good stages, and we were editing in that studio. But it was shot all over Sydney in many different stages and a lot of practical locations. You're out in the locations a lot, John.
Yeah, in fact, what was interesting about Sydney is that it's such a beautiful city, and it's not like America. It's not run down. It doesn't have ghetto sections. It doesn't have like decimation, and it took a long time to find locations that were relevant to America and decay. It took a long time. In fact, some of them had to be created.
I don't know, I just went dead.
Is that really true? I mean,
yeah, that is totally true. They spent weeks and weeks and weeks trying to find just alleys with graffiti.
But generally that kind of stuff is dressed anyway. You would never use that.
I know, but they were looking, walking around the city looking for destroyed Brooklyn, destroyed LA, and it wasn't there. It was, they wanted to do this dystopian future, and Sydney is such a beautiful city that is not it's not dystopian. So it worked for the construct of the Matrix, but it didn't work for the some of the more rude areas.
Right.
The bad things have to turn out this way.
You killed them.
What?
Oh God.
I'm tired, Trinity. I'm tired of this war.
tired of fighting. I'm tired of this ship. Being cold, of eating the same goddamn goop every day. But most of all,
I'm tired of that jack-off and all of his bullshit.
Surprise, asshole.
I bet you never saw this coming. Did you?
I like this scene quite a bit with Joe Pantoliano.
And they break you.
Rushing around.
I wish I could walk in just when
telling all these bodies what he thinks of them.
No, it was me.
Kind of reminds me of when his character in Bound, Caesar, talked to a guy he just killed. It was another great moment.
You would have told us the truth. We would have told you to shove that red pill right up your ass.
And it's not true, Cypher. He set us free.
Free? You called this free?
Another thing about that was interesting about Sydney is that at the time that we filmed this film, you know, the United States has a certain, you know, it's some, you know, many people had cell phones, but it's not, it wasn't prolific. But you came to this city, and this city, almost in the entire population is in contact with one another via cell phone. You come to Sydney, and if you don't have a cell phone, you're nowhere. And it's amazing that, you know, these dramatic connections in reality are occurring via cell phone. And for us, working on the film, our lives became cell phone, you know, cell phone lives. We all talked to one another and knew where each other were all the time. Every, you know, all the keys on this film were given a cell phone upon the commencement of the production. And we began, you know, cell phone existence.
Too late.
God damn you, Cypher.
Don't hate me, Trinity. I'm just a messenger. And right now, I'm going to prove it to you. Morpheus was right. And there's no way I can pull this plug.
I mean, if Neo's the one, then there'd have to be some kind of a miracle to stop me. Right? I mean, how can he be the one if he's dead?
You never did answer me before. If you bought into Morpheus' bullshit. Come on. All I want is a little yes or no. Look into his eyes.
Those big, pretty eyes.
And tell me.
Yes or no?
Yes.
No!
I don't believe it. Believe it or not, you piece of shit, you're still gonna burn.
Owen Patterson was masterful at interpreting the conceptuals that the brothers and Jeff Darrow had laid upon him, and he worked tirelessly to create, you know, an arcane technological nightmare. I was impressed at the literal army that he could erect to construct the sets that Andy and Larry were requesting. Very difficult for any nation's film industry to put together, and just they were in touch. In particular, Owen was in touch with the vibe that they were putting out there. a great collaboration was had in between him, between Bill, the fashion people, the visual effects people. It was one of the rare projects in which the design leads were pretty much connected. The visual effects department was embedded in the center of Owen's production design department. It was one of the most significant connections that I've ever seen in my career. Never before has a designer really invited the cross-pollinization of techniques. He gave us unlimited access to his thoughts about texture, color, light, and technique, and we in turn gave back anything that we could that might influence him. And really, it's the absolute truth, and it's why certain things feel seamless, is because that design was done concurrently, and it's on the screen as a result.
Trinity, Zion's more important than me, or you, or even Morpheus.
Well, there has to be something that we can do.
There is. We pull the plug.
You're gonna kill him. Kill Morpheus.
We don't have any other choice.
Never send a human to do a machine's job.
If indeed the insiders fail, they'll sever the connection as soon as possible. Unless...
they're dead, in either case.
We have no choice but to continue as planned. Deploy the sentinels immediately.
Morpheus, you're more than a leader to us. You're a father. We'll miss you. Neil, this has to be done.
Does it? I don't know. This can't be just coincidence. It can't be.
What are you talking about?
The Oracle. She told me this would happen. She told me that I would have to make a choice.
What choice? What are you doing?
I'm going in.
No, you're not.
I have to.
Neo, Morpheus sacrificed himself so that we could get you out. There is no way that you're going back in.
Morpheus did what he did because he believed that I'm something I'm not.
What?
I'm not the one, Trinity.
You always are confronted with problems that are, you know, they have not come up before.
It can't be true.
That's what makes films unique. So, That is the basically the essence of risk and success in visual effects, is that you always are trying to accomplish something that is unique. There's never a problem that seems to repeat. You always have to apply some sort of adjustment to the technique, and there's always a risk assigned. So,
Morpheus believes something.
Yeah, all the time we would say, golly, you know, is this going to work or not? But, you know, a lot of films are like that. Of course, some stuff, some films don't work out too well. This one, you know, we were lucky that we had an enthusiastic and driven crew to solve these problems.
What are you doing?
I'm going with you.
No, you're not.
No? Let me tell you what I believe. I believe Morpheus means more to me than he does to you. I believe if you are really serious about saving him, you are going to need my help. And since I am the ranking officer on this ship, if you don't like it, I believe you can go to hell. Because you aren't going anywhere else. Tank, load us up.
I'd like to share a revelation that I've had during my time here. It came to me when
I tried to classify your species. I realized that you're not actually mammals. Every mammal on this planet instinctively develops a natural equilibrium with the surrounding environment, but you humans do not. You move to an area and you multiply and multiply until every natural resource is consumed. And the only way you can survive is to spread to another area. There is another organism on this planet that follows the same pattern. Do you know what it is? A virus. Human beings are a disease, a cancer of this planet. You are a plague. And we are the cure.
Okay, so what do you need besides a miracle?
Guns. Lots of guns.
Every problem is absolutely discussed by a group of people who represent different sort of expertise.
No one has ever done anything like this.
And believe it, that there are conference calls that occur around the clock during a production. Any time, any day, we may find ourselves in a discussion that could include people who are in, like, several points in the world. There, you know, you can find, all the time we were finding ourselves with conversations with people in Europe, Australia, United States, other places, trying to bang out what is at the core of a particular problem. And yes, it's always the case that, you know, you have a series of small tests and exercises that sort of, you know, create answers in part, and you need to add these parts together. Nothing is ever essentially off the shelf. There's never one answer. Everything seems to be accumulative of smaller problems and how to solve for those smaller problems to get the big picture.
I feel saturated by it. I can taste your stink. And every time I do, I fear that I've somehow been infected by it. It's repulsive, isn't it? I must get out of here. I must get free. And in this mind is the key, my key. Once Zion is destroyed, there is no need for me to be here. Do you understand? I need the codes. I have to get inside Zion. And you have to tell me how. You're going to tell me, or you're going to die.
The government lobby scene. Where Keanu and I come to rescue Lawrence's character Morpheus. It took probably 10 days to shoot, I think.
Yeah, something like that.
It was intense beyond intense. There were so many explosives.
Would you please remove any metallic items you're carrying, keys, loose change?
It's a scene, you know, going back to something John said earlier,
oh,
probably a lot of people think it's CGI or visual effects. It's all real. I mean, it's real on the set, special
actors
effects.
Doing everything,
it's
yeah.
Actors doing everything. There's a certain amount of wires that were removed later with the help of CG. But all these columns, all the explosions are real.
Yeah, I got effects. Doing everything.
It's
yeah.
Actors doing everything. There's a certain amount of wires that were removed later with the help of CG. But all these columns, all the explosions are real.
Yeah, I got to really experience for the first time, I think, the day that I do the cartwheel off the wall, the day that I shot the cartwheel off the wall, did I realize the pressure of making an action film for an actor. Because I had one chance to get that right, because the setup time would be way too much. And so all of a sudden I went from being this actor who had to do a cartwheel on a wall to I have one take to do this.
They're supposed to have multiple takes. It's interesting because sitting in some warehouse in Sydney is about another three sets of these columns, but Larry and Andy told me later that the setup time to reset a column was about 6 to 8 hours.
And here it comes. I had one take to Get this puppy off! Yow! It was really great, too, because all the guys showed up. The actors showed up and really rooted me on, because it was quite an intense move. This, I hurt my ankle that day, and it was a bit tough to do some of this stuff, but it was such an adrenaline rush completing these days and giving it a try, and it was intense.
Of course, this was tremendously fun scene to edit. It was very well choreographed and planned out, but there was a lot of coverage or a lot of cameras.
I like it. Sorry.
Good. No, go ahead.
I just like the idea that Keanu and I, our characters, Neo and Trinity, kind of just like watch each other's backs, and it's sort of edited by the wonderful Zach that way.
Well, that's what I was going to say was the hardest part, is keeping the parallel stories going, what Carrie's doing and what Keanu's doing at the same time.
But how cool is this move by Mr. Reed?
Very, very cool.
I think that's one of my favorite moves in the movie.
One of the great things here is there's about 2 stuntmen shots in this entire scene. I mean, that's all Keanu. That was all Carrie Ann. That's remarkable.
Yeah.
And one thing that I find pretty interesting about the scene is that nobody actually dies. All these people are virtual. Which is the wild thing about this whole movie, is that, and is the stuff of great discussion, and that is, if you're killing a computer construct, then is it really violent at all? It's just an amorphous computer simulation.
Right.
And a cathartic experience.
As Lawrence says to Keanu in the agent training program, anyone can be one of them. And all these guys are one of them.
Mm-hmm. What were you doing? It's one of my favorite moments in the movie. When he asks him, what were you doing?
What were you
doing?
Like,
he caught him doing something terrible. It's funny, we shot this whole sequence over, obviously, the period of making the film. We didn't shoot it all consecutively, like did the government lobby, and then this was another time, and the roof was months before that. I forgot how long the sequence was until I saw the movie cut together, and I was like, oh yeah, I forgot we fight on the roof. It just kept going, and Lawrence just breaks my heart in this moment. His face just breaks my heart.
This is a great CG sequence, I think, John, you guys at Menix. This whole elevator shaft is one-fifth model or something?
It's a quarter model.
Quarter model. You're not actually, you're...
What I like is that these guys rise so coolly, that they are so collected, and that they have no experience, you know, feeling strain. Because they are superheroes in a virtual world, they don't feel that kind of pressure.
I love this moment. That's like my favorites.
it's a bit of Wachowski humor right there.
Oh, it's such a Larry and Andy moment, isn't it?
The quad kick.
Okay, I gotta say that in watching this film, for me, the most exciting moment is the crowd's reaction to...
Oh, it's coming up.
Coming up to these moments for me up here were really exciting to watch, to be part of, to hear people clapping for my character was kind of exciting. I wanted to stand up in the movie theater and say, that's me!
This is a great visual effects piece here.
Isn't it?
What we call recursive action. I don't think that means anything to anybody else. It's when those guys just... Oh boy, bullet time.
Beautiful.
The best
so
bullet
beautiful.
Time.
This one shot redefines cinema from here on out, in my opinion.
Amazing.
It really does. This shot is rocket science. That shot that we just saw was rocket science.
Only human.
Dodge this.
The audience goes nuts.
The audience goes nuts, and then they go nuts for the whole helicopter thing.
Mm-hmm. It's when those guys just...
Ah.
Oh, boy. Bullet time.
Beautiful.
The best
so
bullet
beautiful.
Time.
This one shot redefines cinema from here on out, in my opinion.
Amazing.
It really does. This shot is rocket science. That shot that we just saw was rocket science.
Only human.
Dodge this.
The audience goes nuts.
The audaudience goes nuts, and then they go nuts for the whole helicopter thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, when you shoot things, you have no idea that, you know, what people are going to respond to.
You move like they do. I've never seen anyone move that fast.
It wasn't fast enough.
The bullet time moments, or that moment where Keanu was dodging bullets, or Carrie was doing the eagle move above the cops in the beginning, is an important concept in the movie. Hurry. In that these are the places where we see if the characters are able to control their environment with their minds. It's a very mind over matter situation, and throughout the film we see strengthening of their ability to overcome the facade that the prison that the Matrix is slowly taken apart by their recognition that they have control over it. And that's what those bullet time moments are about.
I think this scene is another really good example of Larry and Andy's sort of vision and point of view. It's a tremendous set. This is a full-scale set of an office building. There's a helicopter outside there on wires. All the firing is real. I mean, it's done with squibs, but it's all real. There's water pouring in all over the place. It was a wild, wild set to be on.
My least favorite shot.
Why?
I hate morphs.
Did you do that?
Yeah, whatever. It's a visual effect.
Morphs are tough.
You remember. That was
a
drag.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to be different with morphs.
I feel like this was yesterday. I remember it so clearly, being there that day. Big deal.
He's not gonna make it. Gotcha.
Actually, some of this stuff. This stuff here is what was shot on opening day of the movie coming up. It's the flying over Sydney.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really scary because I had to fly with the pilot, of course. But
right.
You know, we were flying so close to buildings, and I'm not a big helicopter fan.
To
start with.
They rewrote the laws of Sydney.
But once again,
do this scene literally.
These are all real shots. These are not CG. These are not composites.
That's a composite.
That shot is a composite.
But like when you see me from the point of view of me flying, and they're
right.
real.
Right. But except for these guys hanging, like
those
this
are
is a real. These are real shots.
That was scary too. Like flying in the helicopter right there with these stuntmen at the end. It was a trip. You know, there were human beings hanging from a rope.
And then this sequence coming up, I had to shoot aerial plates to back up the helicopter crash.
This is a truly great CG sequence.
I felt like it was plausible that I was going to actually reenact the actual script myself in the shooting of these scenes. We came so insanely close to the real skyscrapers.
Woo!
It's a fourth scale miniature with CG and aerials and stunts.
We really blew up a quarter scale building. It was a huge explosion. John used that as the basis for this sequence.
Actually, it was also a triumph for visualization. It was one of the very elaborately visualized, technically planned.
I was when I first was getting to know John, we really got to know each other fast because we John would
give me pre-visualizations of all those shots of the helicopter going to the building. I would load them into the Avid. He and I would work on them and cut them. We'd show them to the directors. They would give us some comments. We'd work them some more. He would come up with a whole new set of visualizations based on that experience. And we went through that about 3 or 4 round trips, right, John? And
yep.
By the time we shot the shot, it was basically blueprints.
Yes.
What we had was a model, and at that point, it just was it went right into place. It was just a matter of extremely accurately reproducing what we've done, which was a huge job in itself. Between knowing the path and walking the path. But it was a lot of fun to do.
Carrie, what is that moment? What is this moment about?
Which one?
What's happening right now?
Got one ready. Subway station.
Is that the realization of his...
That he could be the one. Yeah. I know, I remember Lawrence asked me in the very beginning of the movie, do you know that he's the one from the moment you meet him? And I remember thinking...
The trace was completed.
Back and forth. I think when you know somebody's the one, you go back and forth sometimes.
Order the strike.
Are they the one? Yes, they are. Are they not? Yes, they are.
I think, you know, Larry and Andy love action so much. I mean, it's... He just had this tremendous action scene that could be the finale of any really good movie.
And it keeps going.
And we're just going to build it up again.
You first, Marcus.
Essentially, all the bullet time shots were shot VistaVision because they were still cameras. Still cameras are the same aspect ratio. They're not... Technically, they're not exactly the same as the negative area of VistaVision, but they're pretty darn close. But we needed that resolution, really, because we were going to do a lot of post-processing to that material. Essentially, you have an array of still cameras, and all of the frames that those still cameras... shoot are assembled together. That sounds simple, but there's a lot of problems inherent in that process, in that still cameras are not registered, so you have to stabilize all of that. As well, you have to replicate the exact nature of one lens. So if you have 100 still cameras and you have 100 still lenses, then you're going to have these little distinct differences between every one of them. And that doesn't work when you're trying to assemble them together. You could have something that looks kind of strobic. So you have to create essentially a universal lens. You have to pick one lens that all lenses need to conform to so that all the images look precisely the same. So there is a customized distortion that occurs to every single still frame, and additionally to that, there is a customized graining that occurs, a film grain that is, that occurs to every single frame so that it feels all like the same stock, and that takes a lot of work. So between stabilization, lens attributes, and grain, there's a lot of post-processing that occurs. Interpolation is essentially it's an estimation of what image may occur between two other images, I guess, in the simplest form. Sometimes you need to make many more than one, fabricated frame between two captured still frames. So an interpolation basically is the analysis which needs to occur to create a version of what may happen between two moments in time, between two captured players. For the photography of the visual effects, we had like a crew of like 40 people, probably, around the clock, shooting specialized plates. We had a visualization team that was five visual effects artists that were all high-level computer graphic artists that are more familiar with finishing a computer graphics product than what has been done in the past, which was, you know, essentially a three-dimensional mock-up of the scene. These people were capable of actually taking scenes all the way through to the end. They were technical directors in their own right. And in terms of just the real digital staff, there were approximately 65 people at Mannix Entertainment, and there were about 20 people at D-Film and about 15 people at Amalogic, so you can add all of that up. 9,500, 110, I don't know, computer graphics type artists, digital artists, and 40 photographic artists.
Hear that, Mr. Anderson? That is the sound of inevitability. It is the sound of your death. Goodbye, Mr. Anderson.
We used a lot of different software. This movie had a lot of heavy visualization, and what that means is planning on computer what you intend to photograph. We used Softimage initially for that. We've used that over the years to do a lot of things like control robotic camera systems and just basically plan out where your camera's going to be and how your subject and camera relate to one another. So we used Softimage and did a lot of creature animation in Alias Maya, which was really just coming out when the movie was started, and so it was a pretty risky endeavor to convert a large segment of the production over to a new platform. But we did that, and it's quite a liberating platform. There's some pretty eccentric animation techniques that can be accessed through Alias Maya. As well, we all of our material. Computer graphics materials is rendered on RenderMan, developed by Pixar, and in my opinion, really is the way to go. It's the most accessible photoreal texturing that you can have, and in a practical way, you can do large scale productions, large volumes of shots with RenderMan, and have amazing results. And not, basically lose the farm doing it. Those are only all off-the-shelf types of software we use, and believe it that there is a huge amount of proprietary code work going on, in particular how to, do the bullet time moments and how to seam an array of still frames into a fluid moving motion picture. Piece of film is a huge endeavor in customized interpolation software. And in the backgrounds of bullet time shots, we will see really a very groundbreaking technique developing called virtual backgrounds. If you were to add bullet time and virtual backgrounds together, the term we use is virtual cinematography. It's the beginning of dimensional filmmaking, and essentially, to make a dimensional background, you shoot a series of stills, and from those stills, you understand the shape, and in a computer graphics platform, you use the stills and you use the knowledge of the shape to create a computer graphics version of a real set. And Did I mention eventually, it's just a matter of time, the technique of creating dimensional computer graphic versions of real sets will give way to, standardized techniques for shooting a scene that will result in that scene becoming a complete three-dimensional entity. Just by way of the number of cameras you use, the number of perspectives you use, so, all the customized software related to that is on the clear evolutionary track towards dimensional filmmaking. I think Bill Cope has a phenomenal sense of light and texture, and really working with him was an education for me in style and design. And I myself photographed en masse many of his sets in close-up form, and used that material to embed into the computer graphics. Specifically, he is a master of color, and really just an all-around great guy. He has a sensitivity to the aesthetics of comic book environments, and more so than most people you'll meet, really knows how to translate that into the way he sculpts light and color.
Check him.
I always thought that the ending speech that I have in the movie was one that really represented a lot of faith, and first time I read it, I cried, like when I was auditioning, I was reading it, and I thought, oh my god, this is so emotional. I'm so sad. But I really thought it was important that Trinity, the character that I play, believes that he's the one, believes that he's not dead, and that he's going to come back. So, I thought it was...
You can't be dead.
It was interesting when we shot this scene because sort of the big love moment, and all the crew showed up and everyone showed up to see us kiss. And suddenly people were crowded around the monitors.
It was very sweet because we'd all worked so hard and so long on the movie and people just really cared.
Didn't you guys like both prep your lips properly before you did that? I thought I noticed that. Maybe I'm wrong.
No.
I didn't know. Okay. No moisturizing of the lips before.
No, we just both made sure we weren't. You want to make sure you're fresh. But it was my favorite moment when he says no. No more. I think it's very profound and. I just think it's amazing. And the music. And just the idea that, he's been fighting. People are fighting. And all of a sudden he just gets it. No more. And that idea of no more changes everything. Ah. Favorite moment in the movie right here. And he fights without any effort. Doesn't need to.
He understands truth.
It's just really...
With one hand up behind his back.
And a beautiful sidekick.
Smith.
Look at that leg
time.
Coming back. Come on, it doesn't get any better than that. Ha! on.
Wonk.
They're scared. It's pretty creepy.
This is the essence of Keanu's presence now bubbling its way into the evilness.
The room is breathing.
Meanwhile,
back at the ranch.
My favorite monster.
The squid are really good.
Yep.
That's the real kiss.
Mm-hmm.
Fade to black kiss.
The Matrix 2. I want more kissing.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries.
Making the Matrix was took a year of my life and was truly one of the greatest experiences of my life. People that I got to be friends with and to work with are very dear in my heart, and I hope that you enjoy the movie as much as I did making it. Bye.
I love working on this movie. You don't often get a chance to. For me, as an editor, it's one craft that goes into making a movie. And so, seems to me, you don't often get a chance to have so much fun with your craft. Get so much fun to support a movie that has such a great vision.
Movies suck. I hate movies.
Remover, and you
CP.